Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where you hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we feature a discussion with Vic Salerno, the CEO of U.S. Fantasy Sports and a legendary bookmaker from Las Vegas, on the hurdles that legal sports betting in the U.S. will face. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. Vic Salerno is a member of the AGA's Gaming Hall of Fame because of his legendary career as a legal bookmaker in Nevada. As head of American Wagering, Salerno launched the first mobile sports betting app in the U.S., causing the company to be acquired by bookmaking giant William Hill. Salerno's new company, U.S. Fantasy Sports, uses a parimutuel system to allow players to enjoy fantasy sports in all jurisdictions where fantasy sports is legal. His long background as a legal bookmaker allows him a unique viewpoint on the challenges of legal sports betting in the United States. He spoke with me at his offices in Las Vegas in January. Vic Salerno, thanks for joining us on the podcast. It's an honor to talk to a member of the Gaming Hall of Fame. That's a rare small group of people, and somebody with your experience in sports betting. You have more sports betting experience in your little finger than some of the so-called experts that are trying to advise casinos on what to do about sports betting if and when it becomes legal. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Roger.
So let's start with the sports betting case that's before the Supreme Court, that's the challenge that New Jersey put on to the PASPA, Professional Sports Betting Act. Where do you think that's going?
It's hard to tell now. It's probably still a flip of the coin. I think it's no different than anybody else. I think it's either going to be repealed or that the Supreme Court's going to send it to the legislators and tell them, make the law,
right,
change it. It's not constitutional now. I remember when it went in effect, of course, back then it was called the Bill Bradley Bill.
That's right. Yeah.
Senator Bradley, a former NBA player, was the sponsor behind it. And I remember, like it was yesterday, New Jersey turned down the opportunity,
right,
to be one of the fifth states. So
there was such a political machinations behind that, because a governor was up for re-election, and they didn't want, the supposed minorities to come out that bet would have drawn. So it was just a crazy confluence of events that prevented that.
It truly was. And then you always had, I always felt that in a way they were protecting the illegal bookmakers on the East Coast, in a way.
Could have been, yep.
Right? And, and my going forward, if they repeal PASPA, and if they don't do it the right way, they, being the people that are getting in the business, don't do it the right way,
right,
it could be the best thing that happened to the illegal bookmakers,
sure, right,
again.
Right, right, yeah.
The repeal.
So my question is, does it even matter these days? Because there's so much attention being drawn to how PASPA has failed so miserably that there seems to be some kind of movement or at least some momentum in Congress to fix it no matter what the Supreme Court says.
I agree with that. I think that if they just said keep it, that Congress would go and change the law.
Right.
I truly believe it, and I've always said that this is happening. We all know it's happening. How many times it's not regulated? Nobody's benefiting, not on a city or a state or county or federal level.
Yeah.
We're not.
Right.
And it's getting more popular, and it's harder to detect now with the technology. Before you tap phones,
right,
et cetera,
sure, right,
that's a lot easier than the way it is today.
Sure, no question. So let's say that PASPA is overturned or Congress passes something that puts it in the hands of the states to legalize it. What will the shape of the industry look like if that's the case?
Boy, I don't know. I think it's going to be a Pandora's box
that
opens, to be honest with you, because every jurisdiction, and you've seen it in the past, the different tax rates and different regulatory limits and everything else is really, really going to affect it. And states don't like to get along with each other or do the same thing.
Right.
Where, in a way, they could take the Nevada model and do it tomorrow. I mean, it's worked for us for 60 years or more. So why not take that? But then it really depends. I think the biggest fear that I have going in these other states is they don't understand the business. It's really gambling, and it's really a low return on your investments. I mean, you can see that here in Nevada, it's 1% to 2% of our gross revenues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So in these other states, and we're paying a tax rate of around, let's say, 6%.
For, right.
And we have a hard time making them with 6%. So if you come in with, like, Pennsylvania said 34% plus 2%,
right,
36%, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how people can make it and
right.
add the same odds that are being that we offer here in Nevada.
Okay, great. So when Delaware approved sports betting, before the courts said you had to limit it to the parlay betting, there was one property that you know built a Vegas style sports book, spent millions of bucks, and ended up having to eat that investment. How would you recommend the casinos that are going to get into sports betting that they approach it?
Well, if you take Nevada, for example, the sports books are coming down in size, even in the big properties. They're not as large. We built them for Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. It's it's the same thing that's been said many times. It's like you build a church for Easter, and what do
right.
you do
right.
the rest of the year? And so I think that they should start off minimally, use existing space. There's nothing. They all have conference rooms or other rooms where they can televise it.
Sure.
And with today's ways that you can wager, especially with the mobile application, why do you need to build these huge theaters to them? And I don't think it's going to attract that many new people, especially in New Jersey. I don't think people are going to drive to Atlantic City just for a Sunday's football game or whatever. The other New Jersey property, the racetrack you're talking about, it wasn't really the racetrack. It was really the person going in, William Hill, I was with at that time. We were the ones that spent the money on renovating it. So that's going to be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah. So you mentioned mobile betting. I mean, that's really exploded here in Nevada. I mean, I haven't been in a sports book in 2 years because I bet from my phone and on all the various apps I have. So how do you think that's going to play out for the rest of the country? Some states seem to say, okay, we're going to go right into that. Others are going to say, no, we're going to start with sports betting in the casino and then maybe grow from that.
I think you're right. They'll be afraid. It's no different. But if you look at New Jersey now, they're online, and the revenues in gaming have increased.
Mm-hmm.
But the increase has all been on online or mobile apps.
Yes, right.
And I think it's the same way. Just like you have all the apps, so do I.
Mm-hmm.
And I never used to play for myself.
Right.
Now I have 9 different apps
and
looking for me. And it's the convenience. Now, when we started this in 2009, this being the mobile app, we had to give phones to people to get them to try it.
Right.
And then we had... Our biggest problem then wasn't teaching them how to go through the app. They didn't know how to turn these phones on, these smartphones.
Exactly right.
And we were giving them away with service and everything else
at that
time. And then all of a sudden, people saw how convenient and even or easy it was.
Right.
I mean, like you say, you're at your home, probably if you're going to bet on a game or a halftime, it's a minimum of an hour. Get in your car, drive to the place, find a parking spot, get back in, and you're sitting there in your underwear. Why do I want to get dressed to make a bet?
Right.
So it is a convenience. To answer your question about these other states, it's going to come down to just like anything else. We saw what happened to Native American gambling going across the country. We saw racinos come in and how they went across the country. Now everybody's thousands, I don't know the exact number of casinos. I think the same thing's going to happen. It's going to be a progressive thing. And the states that have the lower tax and the cost of doing business are going to do much better than the other states because they'll be able to give the customer the benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a budget, X budget, you want to spend it on a huge facility Or would you rather spend on marketing to a mobile app where the person's going to have it at 27-24? And to me, it's really a no-brainer. Yes, you can have it, but utilize your existing facilities. Mm-hmm. Most of these places have a sports bar already.
Sure, right.
And the other thing is put in self-service terminals.
Kiosks,
right. Like mm-hmm. at the airport. When we right. go to the airport now, they have one person that's overseeing what? Four kiosks right. and help the people if they need it. So
well,
I think that's
here, William Hill put in the kiosks in the PT saloons, if I'm not mistaken.
Right,
well,
we do that, right?
Yeah. So it's not a difficult technology to install.
No, I've been lucky enough to have people around me and with companies that were forward thinking, but it wasn't really like we created the technology.
Right.
We just used existing technologies and adapted that to the sports betting industry.
Mm-hmm. Right. So Atlantic City casino operators are hoping for the Las Vegas effect, you know, during the Super Bowl and March Madness, that they'll get an influx of people that will come down and watch the games. What can they do to ensure that expectation comes to pass?
Well, I mean, if they legalize it, but they're still going to have to promote it and
right.
do parties just
mm-hmm.
like we do here. Everybody
sure.
does a party, but it's like it's funny how business works. In that on days, for example, the Kentucky Derby, we give everybody a T-shirt or a mug or something else. That's the one day you don't have to give that stuff away.
Yeah.
If you can't get them on Kentucky Derbies or Super Bowls,
right.
you're in a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Give them those T-shirts on the second Tuesday of every odd
right.
month
yeah,
or something.
Sure. Right.
But that's just how, I mean, that's my feeling on it. They'll do great, but I think they do all right already.
Yeah, they in Atlantic City, they still have Super Bowl parties and things
yes.
of that nature. So,
as far as sports wagering across the country, I still think Las Vegas would be the main
right.
the
mm-hmm.
main focus of it. And it's no different than how we always say you learn to gamble online, and then you have an easier time approaching the live game.
Right,
you're not as intimidated by it.
Right, no question. So you mentioned, you know, what a narrow margin sports betting is. How would you go into a state and convince them that you can't tax this out of existence because you won't get the benefits that come from it? Just what Pennsylvania did with the online gaming thing, they're going to tax the slot machines at the same rate as they do their land-based casinos, which is in the mid-50s. So nobody's going to put a slot machine online with that kind of a tax rate.
No, I agree 100%. When you go to, in our good years, let's say the average of the past 20 years, we average take out of keeping about 5% mm-hmm. of the handle that
right.
we put through. Of that 5%, first of all, we have to pay the 6% to the state,
right.
and then the federal has an excise tax where whether we win or lose, we pay 0.25%. So you start off with those,
right.
and then you have your overhead. So your margins are very thin. So what will happen is, let's take Philadelphia, for example, being right on the state line
mm-hmm.
there, or you could go to Delaware, and Delaware, when you hit a parlay, is giving you 13 to 10.
Right.
So for every 100, you get 130. But in Pennsylvania, if you only get 120, why would you bet
sure.
there?
Right. Right.
So I think it's going to be where the customer gets the best deals, where he's going to go. I mean, we see that play out here. People know when they're playing a slot machine or video poker, what the takeout
mm-hmm.
is,
right.
and the places that have the better do much better than the other places.
Right, right. But the, you know, as you mentioned, that one state, I think it was Pennsylvania, is talking about a mid-30% tax rate. That's just not going to fly. I mean, nobody's going to bring a sports book in there if that's going to be the tax rate.
If you were a bookmaker in Pennsylvania, you wouldn't be worried at all.
Yeah.
You would hope that you get 36% right. because they can't compete.
Sure, right.
You know, the 11 to 10 is going to become a 12 to 10 or a 13
right.
to
right.
10, which is very bad for
right.
the customer.
Right. So, yeah, you mentioned the 11 to 10. I mean, there's been some talk that they're going to change that in these states, that it'll be less of a payback for the customer because the edge will just grow that substantially.
Exactly. Instead of getting back a dollar, say like $1.91, where your dollar,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get back $1.86.
Right.
And you don't have to be a mathematician to figure this out very
right.
very quickly. I would love to be the illegal bookmakers and in those kind of states.
Right. Yeah, because people will flock to them.
Well, you know, there are certain things that we have to overcome if the past was reversed. And we've seen it here. From the time that I came here, 40 years ago to now, the number of bookmakers, illegal bookmakers, has gone down greatly,
right.
Rightfully so.
Sure.
And the only reason we've been able to do that is that the state hasn't overtaxed us, therefore taking our potential profits away from us. So I think the same thing's going to happen in these other states. You have to be there. But the illegal bookmakers, they first of all, they give the convenience.
Mm-hmm.
If you're older like we are, you don't know how to use an app,
right.
They'll take your bets over the phone still.
Sure.
They'll extend credit to you.
Right.
A lot of times they'll forgive you what you owe them. And they don't have to pay taxes, so that their cost of doing business is not how much security we need for our race book or how much we're paying satellite television for the pitchers or the NFL or anything else. They don't have any of those things, so it's very tough to compete against somebody in that business.
Right. So another factor in the volatility of sports betting is that, you know, a small casino is going to have trouble, you know, balancing the risk there unless you've got a bookmaker on staff. So what kind of opportunities are there for the William Hills, the Cantors, and the Betfairs of the world with this?
Tremendous opportunity for them, and you're exactly right. And when you start talking about liability, which is a whole other factor that's going to come in, I mean, for example, last week, probably one of the worst weekends that the bookmakers in Nevada have had, might be ever. Every favorite won on Sunday. Only two didn't cover the spread. So you have that happening. I mean, you're talking tens of millions of dollars here.
Mm-hmm.
What would that be in the state of New Jersey, for example?
Right.
And if you have the lottery running, and they're losing 20, 50 million on a weekend, that's a little bit different when you're a governor. So you're going to have to know how to manage the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that know how to manage it, but there are not a lot of them that know this. And you're going to be at a major risk in these towns or these states.
Sure, right. Yeah. So let's talk about your company, U.S. Fantasy Sports. You've done some really interesting things here in Nevada, and now I understand you're about to go mobile, which I think will make a huge difference. So explain how your system works.
Okay. First of all, we really have two different companies within U.S. Fantasy. One of the companies is Nevada-based. In Nevada, we're in around 58 casinos now, over-the-counter business.
Mm-hmm.
So the first app would be for those same casinos to offer the app where customers could use their smartphones to place wagers. So the convenience factor is going to increase there. On the other side, the U.S. Fantasy, what we have is the national. We're going into states where fantasy sports is legal and where we comply with UEGA, right?
Right.
So we feel we can go into approximately 25 states with this mobile app and appeal to the nationwide customers with it. The way it works, which is different, is than your traditional, if there is such a thing as traditional fantasy sports, is that we have events where we list quarterbacks.
Right.
Say we list the 10 top quarterbacks, and then those quarterbacks you can pick. You could pick your Tom Brady, or you could pick Ben Roethlisberger, whatever, to throw for the most yards.
Right.
And the one that finishes the highest, of course, wins. But the odds are determined by the people placing entries into it.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar to horse racing.
Sure, right.
So obviously, if Brady's playing Cleveland, he's going to be a 4-5 shot,
right?
And if Roethlisberger is playing against the Cowboys, he might be 7-1.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you have that come in, and as the money goes in, dynamically we change the payoffs, and then, of course, when the game starts, you're locked in at those prices. And then you can also play who's going to finish first and second, like an exacta in horse racing. Mm-hmm. So there's different ways. And if you want to play a whole team, we will have a list of quarterbacks for the first event, receivers for the second, running backs for the third, et cetera, down, and you can parlay all those. Okay. So there's another way that's more like your traditional way to pick a team.
Okay, great. So that'll be all easily explained on the app, I imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, great.
Of course.
Now another opportunity for you is to become a consultant. Well, I know you are a consultant, but you know, I can see you going before these state legislatures and testifying, you know, that they have to keep, you know, about the facts of life when it comes to sports betting. Have you been approached for that yet?
Yes, we have, and we have, you know, we have a great staff online with many, many years, too many years of experience,
right. Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you. I mean, we are managing in Northern Nevada now a small casino and managing their risk for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we could do the same for anybody else that would be interested. But, for example, our bookmaker, our main bookmaker is Robert Walker, who has in the past run the Stardust Hotel when the sportsbook was big there. Then he ran MGM Mirage. He retired and came back and worked for the Genting people,
right,
down in Bimini.
Mm-hmm.
And he's come back, and we're fortunate to have him on staff. In addition to him, we do have Bob Kaczynski, Vice President of Finance for Steve Wynn and
mm-hmm.
Golden Nugget and MGM Mirage. He was at the Hilton, and likewise with Tom Willer, a marketing guy that has vast experience in the marketing business. And then in the compliance, we have my son, who has been here since birth in the business and was compliance officer for William Hill and has been before the gaming board license there.
Sure.
So that's just part of our team. That's really great team.
Well, just listening to those names, I'm counting. It's probably at least 200 years of experience.
Too many years.
In the gaming industry, right? Well,
it's really a lot of years.
Yeah. Well, Vic, thanks for the time. I appreciate you sitting down with us. I can't wait to see what happens with this next year, and we'll check back with you when that happens. And certainly when you launch your app, let's hear what's going on there as well.
I appreciate it very much, Bob.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the GGB Podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. To learn more about the gaming industry, visit GGBMagazine.com, or for a weekly update, visit GGBNews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, or on LinkedIn and Facebook at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.